The following is a presentation of Morning Drive Media and the Wrestling Viewpoint Network. Welcome back to the Wrestling Viewpoint Network. I'm Ken Napsok, and here we are for another edition of the California Classic Wrestling Podcast. And our reporter in the field, Dan Farron, had a spectacular time in the Nostalgia Room at this year's Cauliflower Alley Club Reunion, the 49th annual, and weird things popped up, interesting things popped up, and wonderful little interview opportunities that we didn't expect. And this is one with KK Carlton, who is the daughter of Lord Leslie Carlton, a mainstay in the early days of pro wrestling, who also happened to be a very talented artist. And she had his collection on display, along with some championship belts, some robes, and some great stuff. And she's interested in herself, fronting a heavy metal polka band. That's right. So we'll take it to Dan on the floor in the Nostalgia Room up there at the Gold Coast Hotel and Casino for the 49th Annual Cauliflower Alley Club Reunion with this little fun interview.
I'm talking to KK Carlton, and I was going to tell you about who Lord Leslie Carlton was, but I figured it'd be better to let the man's daughter explain who he was. So, KK?
Hi, I'm KK Carlton Flugeman, and I'm here with my husband. We're debuting the art collection that my father left behind. He was the 1947 world champion heavyweight. He was one of the top mat men from the 1940s and 50s, and I believe into the 60s for a short time. Was on television up to five nights a week. Was one of the wrestlers that would headline Madison Square Gardens. Very, very top name. But he also was a very prolific artist, and he left us over 100 original oil paintings that we have the rights to reproduce. So we're here today at the 2014 Cauliflower Alley Club meeting here in Las Vegas, debuting some of the collection. We also have things like a world champion belt from 1947. I think that we might have some of the oldest and most interesting memorabilia here today, truly. We have that belt, some articles from things like Pageant Magazine. We have two of the monocles that he was known for wearing in the ring, as well as three of his custom-made robes that he had from made in the 1940s for him. We have many pictures of him here wearing these same robes that are on display today. So he was a wonderful person. You know, he died of leukemia when I was relatively young, and he was in his 60s when I was born. He had married a much younger woman that was my mother, who had myself and our sons, his sons, their sons, not my sons, my brothers. And she was a New York City Rockette. There's a picture of her right over there that we have on display. And she was a Hungarian immigrant. So he actually was from Hungary originally. His family had come here to flee the World War I. Because he was nobility, his grandfather was a baron in Budapest, but when they came here, they did not want to have the association because nobility in that country at the time, people were fleeing. You did not want to be there and be nobility. So I think it's very funny that he resurrected some of his nobility by using Lord Carlton, which he thought would be much more digestible and acceptable in America at the time to be a British lord than to say that you really were of Hungarian or German nobility, because people did not like that in the 1940s. So that was pretty clever. His father was a composer who wrote much of the circus music that you hear for Barnum and Bailey Circus. His mother was Katie Carlton, and she picked up the Carlton name because she was touring with the Carlton sisters as a dance and singing performer on the West Coast, and they had come to San Francisco. So he liked the last name Carlton when she adopted this, and so he went with Lord Carlton when he refined that into from Tug Carlson to you know, the names he used, and then eventually had that one. But his mother, Katie Carlton, was the topic of the song Katie Beautiful Katie, was written for Katie Carlton. So a lot of history with the family, having a lot to do with show business. Myself, I am in a heavy metal polka band called Krankenwelpen. Yep. Krankenwelpen in German means sick puppies.
Okay.
It's a very funny band. We do original music, but we also do a few renditions of some old Spike Jonze songs like Der Führersfest. Then we do like a heavy metal version of that. Also some Dr. Demento pieces like the punk polka. We had to take that and make that a heavy metal polka song. So we do some very funny things like this, but we are a very hard heavy metal band with a humorous edge and twist to what we do. And
how, if somebody wanted to order any of your CDs, how would they go about doing that?
They can contact the band directly through Facebook at www.facebook.com/krankenwelpen.com, and that's spelled K-R-A-N-K-E-N. The second word is Welpen, W-E-L-P-E-N. And you can also use that name at AOL.com, Krankenwelpen at AOL.com, and contact the band directly that way. We have a full CD out, and we're also debuting a new single that we did, a heavy metal polka version of Brahms' Hungarian Dance No. 5, completely rewritten with lyrics to be about gypsies. It's very, very comical and crazy. We feature the only 3-time world champion accordion player on the planet is on this single with us, in addition to all the other amazingly talented members of our band. It's everything we do, we find the best players, the you know, most talented people we like to recruit into this project. So everything is raising the bar, I think, you know. And heavy metal, a lot of people think that people are just screaming and playing the same thing over and over. This song has 57 tracks in the studio, and this is a professional studio that does television and movie soundtracks and things that are using this to show people who come in to show off the studio, saying that the people playing on this are phenomenal. Everybody's pieces, from the drummer who used to be in the band Tora Tora to our guitar player, who Michelangelo Baddio said is the next guitar legend, to our 3-time world champion accordion player, the people in the studio are blown away, saying the amount of time changes you guys use, the amount of tracks, the amount of instrumentation is off the charts. So we're not the screaming, repetitive kind of heavy metal band. We have a lot of melody, a lot of groove, and we only enlist the most talented players that your planet has to offer.
Now, you also have prints of the paintings that your father did for sale also, right?
Yes, we do. We can reproduce any one of the paintings into different sizes. We're sticking basically with 2 different sizes because we do very limited editions of only 1,000 editions per piece. And I sign those. Everyone, he has signed his own personal paintings, and they are dated for the print. We give a certificate of authenticity, which I sign and have the seal for that. So they're very limited editions, and they're very high quality, actually, giclées, which is a heavier inking process than a lithograph. So we have an example of one today that's what they turn out looking like. I know you can't see what I'm pointing at, but it's a really amazing painting I'm pointing at. But like I say, he was a very prolific painter. A lot of people will say, you know, well, there's some wrestlers who then, when they stopped wrestling, went into painting. In my father's case, he was painting before he was wrestling. He was considered a child prodigy. At the age of 9, he was discovered by the San Francisco School for Fine Arts and was given a full scholarship to attend there as the only child who was ever given that, because they believed he was so gifted as a child that he started to do that. But then he had this amazing story that he would tell me, that when he was 12 years old, he contracted blood poisoning after scraping his arm on some sidewalk and getting blood poisoning. And he went to the hospital, where in that time in San Francisco, they would put you on a board so that the blood couldn't settle a certain way. He had to have arm-to-arm blood transfusions with his uncle, which would be my cousin's father, that was an amazing person in himself, and did blood-to-blood transfusions with him. He was in the hospital on this board for months, almost dying, got very thin, very weak. So he said that when he came out of the hospital and he survived that, he vowed to be strong. So he started to work out and become very athletic. He was into football. I have pictures of this. He was a lifeguard at Fleischacker Pool in San Francisco. And then at 17, he won the Golden Gloves boxing, and then decided to get into wrestling because he said he didn't want to get punched in the head so much. He went to college in Ipswich, England. He was a very intelligent, very articulate, highly intelligent man, and he really played the part with wrestling, where he was very against running around with all the women, and he didn't drink, and he didn't smoke, and he never did any kind of drugs, and he did not eat red meat. So I was raised being very health conscious, very conscious of diet, exercise, taking care of yourself, not eating certain foods, never ate refined sugar, all of these things. But then he went on to win the world title in heavyweight wrestling, and again was a very flamboyant, very showy performer, very theatrical. Would have people like a Swami who would be giving him psychic messages of what to do next in the ring. And some of the really fun things that I have in the memorabilia department, which is boxes and boxes and almost a crate full of things that I have at home, and with addition to the paintings, I liked the crazy things like letters that his fans would write to him asking if they could ask advice from his Swami about their lives, what they should do next. So obviously this must have been a very convincing gimmick in the ring. But he had a very over the top life. I would love to find someone legitimate to do a book deal with, or even I've had a lot of people come to me and say this would make a great made for television movie, because I have a lot of crazy things that went on in our world. Some of it would come across as sounding rather negative, but I like to put a positive spin on things because I like to be a very forgiving person. He was an amazing human being, very philanthropic, did many wonderful things. His wife, my mother, who I love and take care of still because he would want me to, had some mental issues that provided for some interesting experiences growing up, and that he dealt with. Her believing he was, I don't know if you want me to go there. she believed that, and again, I think she had mental, highly intelligent, beautiful, funny, articulate woman. She was convinced that he was the devil at times. At other times, she loved him beyond anything you could say. But then she would flip out and think he was the devil. She would tell me the art collection, it is haunted. She was throwing it away after he passed away, and I was a teenager. I took all of it and kept all of these things for myself because she believed it was possessed. But she would try to poison his food. She attempted to shoot him in the house. She was 5150'd for this. And he would take her back. So, I mean, maybe it could be like a very crazy love story.
Well, that's definitely love if you take somebody back.
Go ahead and give them the love line of the century.
Oh, which one? I one time asked my father.
Why she would constantly take her back.
I would ask my father in very candid moments, why do you put up with her and stay with her? And he would say, one thing he would say that I always said is a funny quote was, the loneliness will drive you to it. The other one was, her lies are better than my truth, she would sink me in court. And I watched this be a very true thing, because when she fired the gun off in the house at him and she was taken away by the police because she was walking up and down the street with a loaded weapon talking to herself, they let her go the next day because she convinced them that she was being abused, and they let her go with the gun. He never laid a hand on her. He was very much a women's rights activist. So that would almost be the most ugly thing you could say about someone who was such a pacifist and a peaceful person. But it was an easy push-button thing for a woman to get attention this way. Right. And he's a big man. She's only 5'2". So, I mean, he loved and protected her as he did me, and was very, old-fashioned, extremely old-fashioned. But she was 16 when they got married. She was a New York City rocket. She kind of learned that that's how you get people's attention. And I think that she was very upset that she gave up her contract to be dancing and to go to Vegas and places like this to follow him around in his career, because he was already a champion wrestler. So she traveled with him. So it was kind of a little bit of like a more of a mental case, I Love Lucy kind of a thing.
And
she was a redhead. And so she was having to be in his shadow. And she would have been an amazing actress. She truly would have been, because she had police fooled. She had my school fooled when she locked me in my bedroom for 7 months. I did not graduate from high school because I missed so much time for being locked up in my room. And it would be more of a reaction to, you know, her having a mental breakdown where she would say, my father was mad at me and I can't come out of my room, and she would tell my father, I'm mad at him, so that's why I'm not coming out of my room.
Right.
I found this out much later after he had passed away, where my aunt would say, this is what my father was saying to her, that why doesn't the baby come out of her room, you know, that, my mother was saying that it was because I hated him, and she would try to cause dissension in the house because I believe she understood that's how you would control everyone.
Right.
And now with them, they had separate wings of the house. He had his wing of the house and she had hers. They never shared the room.
Right.
So she kind of controlled a lot of her environment,
mm-hmm.
and she was used to doing this, and again, has a lot of problems. Now they understand what mental illness is, and where she is now, they know that she has these problems, but you love her for what she is, where she's funny, and she's humorous, and she's smart, and you just have to look at that and say, well, you know, I remember the time she poisoned his soup, and he almost died. I remember the time she poisoned his tea, you know, and I was always being told not to say anything. There was a time when I was locked up for 7 months, the way that that ended was the house was shaking, and I'm like, well, what's going on? And then again, boom, the house starts to shake, and I'm thinking, there's an earthquake. I'm not going to die in this house. I kicked the doorknob. I got out of my room. I went into the living room, where I'm seeing in the driveway, we had our houseboat. You know, my father loved his houseboat and swimming and things like this. We had the houseboat dry docked in our driveway. He was backing the car up and hitting the boat, driving forward and hitting the pillars that held the front of the house up that was shaking the house. And then he gets out and walks in. He was incoherent and saying that he was seeing double, and that, but if he covered one eye, he could see, and saying very disconnected things and staggering to his room. I was in shock. I had not seen my father in 7 months, and I'm just like, what's going on? So my mother is overreacting, being very hysterical, oh my goodness, goes to lay him down in his bed. Then she comes, I'm sitting there just in shock, she comes running back into the living room and looks at me and says, don't you dare call the police or an ambulance, you know, don't you dare do that, you know, because she wanted him to die. And in that moment, it occurred to me, okay, she must have done this to him and sent him out to go get something, to hoping he would get into a car accident. So I had a very bad moral dilemma at that moment, and I was 16 years old. Do I call the police and save my father's life and suffer the wrath of my mother, who has threatened me and who would always threaten me like this? Or do I sit here and say nothing and allow my father to die? So I picked up the phone and I called 911, and they came and they gave him oxygen. He refused to go to the hospital. They were hydrating him. He got better and got over it. And it was at that point, everything just resumed to being normal. I could come back out and eat dinner at the table. Didn't have just crazy stories like this, but... And then having the police tell me, you're very calm and composed, you know, at 16, you're explaining to us. I didn't say, oh, I think my mother did this. I just said, well, he came in and he was seeing double and all this, where my mother would not give them any answers. She was acting hysterical and couldn't even tell them what his name was because she was angry that the police were there. But I have many stories like this.
Exactly.
If somebody would want to make a movie of this, because again... You know, I had someone who wanted to write a book, and they had personal issues where they hated their mother, and they were really building the whole mommy dearest kind of angle.
Yeah.
I don't like that. I admired Joan Crawford and thought she was a fantastic actress, and I think that they really did her wrong in what they said. Again, I would rather go with the angle of forgiving people for being sick and trying to get people help, and that you can still love someone. You know, again, I am honoring his love of her.
Right.
He knew that he had a crazy wife, and he was an honorable man that was not going to leave this woman who was the mother of his children. He was going to stay with her, and he loved her, and I know that she loved him, but I think maybe she had some very bad experiences with men. Being 16 in a rocket, I have some magazines that were like Wink and Eiffel, where she was like a lingerie model in these kind of, you know, by today's standards, it wouldn't be nasty. But for those 1950s, it was pretty rough,
pretty
kind
nice.
Of material. Yeah. She was 15 years old.
Yeah.
So, I mean, she may have had some very bad things happen to her where she has issues with men.
Right.
And I think a lot of people need to look at that industry even to see the kind of mental damage. I am a survivor of possibly the porn industry by way of being abused by a woman who was mentally sickened by things that she was probably subjected to
right.
from that industry. And that's the way I look at things and try to see something. Something probably happened to her that made her very distrustful of men. And thank God that she actually was with a man who would stay with her anyway and love her and not be abusive to a woman who had these problems. In my opinion, he's almost a saint for having dealt with these things.
Thanks, Dan, for gathering that interview on the floor of the 49th Annual Cauliflower Alley Club Reunion's Nostalgia Room, which is a great room to go hang out in and just kind of soak up the history of professional wrestling. There's so much there to take in, and we met so many great people there in that room and at the convention and reunion overall for those 4 days. It was a great time. We're looking forward to the 50th. Special thanks to K.K. Carlton for opening up the books of life there and sharing some history, both in and out of the ring, on her father. There's some great stuff there, some dark stuff, some honest stuff, but a lot of positive stuff. The artwork was great. The robes and the championship belts we had that she had on display that we got to look at were just really interesting. So hopefully they're back next year and you can maybe take it in yourself. This is the last of our series of interviews that we conducted at the Cauliflower Alley Reunion Club this year. Like I said, Dan and I are going back for the 50th, and there's a lot more to get done, a lot more people we want to talk to, a lot more things we want to bring to you. Maybe you can join us too. For now, if you're joining us on iTunes, be sure to rate and review and subscribe to the Wrestling Viewpoint Network so you can get all of our shows. If you're just a fan of the California Classic Wrestling Podcast, still give us a rate and review. Tell us how much you love Dan's show. And don't forget to join the search out and join the California Classic Wrestling Facebook group page, moderated by Dan Farum. You can follow us on Twitter at WrestlingVN, myself at Katnapsock, and Real Dan Farum. Give him a follow and tell him what you thought about his series of interviews he was able to conduct at the CAC, the 2014 CAC, the 49th annual. I love saying that because 49 years, 50 next year, of celebrating and protecting the legacy and history of this great American art form. Hope you enjoyed this interview and the series of interviews from on location there at the Gold Coast Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas, Nevada. We'll do it again in April for the 50th, and look for more shows, especially the California Classic Wrestling Podcast and other shows as we take a look at the wonderful world of professional wrestling. We'll see you next time.